tam her eva.
Certainly.
Manasa, by the mind. Grinan, accepting. Bhuva, became. Pramada, woman. Uttama, highly situated. Anantaram, after death. Vidharpusha, of Vidharva. Rajasingasya, of the most powerful gang. Veshmane, at the house. Translation, King Paranjana gave up his body while remembering his wife. And consequently, in his next life, he became a very beautiful and well-situated woman. He took his next birth as the daughter of King Vidarbha in the very house of the king. So you can repeat. King Paranjana gave up his body while remembering his wife. And consequently, in his next life, he became a very beautiful and well-situated woman. He took his next birth as the daughter of King Vidarbha in the very house of the king. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ji Jai. Since King Paranjana thought of his wife at the time of death, he attained the body of a woman in his next birth. This verifies the following verse in Bhagavad Gita in the 8th chapter, text 6. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam chachachyante kalevaram tang tam evaiti konteha sadathud bhava bhavataha. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. When a living entity is accustomed to think of a particular subject matter or become absorbed in a certain type of thought, he will think of that subject at the time of death. At the time of death, one will think of the subject that has occupied his life while he was awake, lightly sleeping or dreaming, or while he was deeply sleeping after falling from the association of the Supreme Lord. The living entity thus transmigrates from one bodily form to another according to nature's course until he finally attains the human form. If he is absorbed in material thoughts and ignorant of spiritual life, and if he does not take shelter under the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Govinda, who solves all questions of birth and death, he will become a woman in the next life. Especially if he thinks of his wife. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 3rd canto, in chapter 31, text 1, Karmana Doiva Netrina. A living entity acts piously and impiously, and sometimes in both ways. All actions are taken into account, and the living entity is afforded a new body by his superiors. Although King Paranjana was overly attached to his wife, he nonetheless performed many pious fruitive activities. Consequently, although he took the form of a woman, he was given a chance to be the daughter of a powerful king. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, the 6th chapter, text 41. Rapya punya kritam lokan usitva shashvati samaha suchinam shimatam gehe yoga brasto vijayate. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. If a person falls from the path of bhakti yoga, God realization, due to attachment to fruitive activity, philosophical speculation, or mystic yoga, he is given a chance to take birth in a high and rich family. The higher authorities appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead thus render justice to the living entity according to the living entity's desires. Although King Paranjana was overly absorbed in thoughts of his wife and thus became a woman, He took birth in the family of a king due to his previous pious activities. The conclusion is that all our activities are taken into consideration before we are awarded another body. Narada Muni therefore advised Vyasadeva that one should take to Krishna consciousness devotional service and abandon all ordinary occupational duties. This advice was also given by Lord Krishna himself. Although a devotee may fall from the path of spiritual consciousness, he will nonetheless attain a human body in the home of a devotee or a rich man. In this way, one can resume his devotional service. So, tam eva manasa grinan babhuva pramanottama anantaram vidharvasya raja singhasya Vishmane, so Omagada, Trimirandasha, Gananjana, Shilakaya, Chakshur, Unmiditam, Yena, Tasmai, Shigurvena Maha. So before talking specifically about the situation of a devotee who doesn't quite make it in this life, we'll talk about the general principle of whatever you think of at the time of death, that's where you go or the situation you arrive in. And I was just reading something very interesting yesterday that illustrated this point. It was there's one devotee who puts out an astrological journal every month. And in this journal, he was telling the story of one American soldier. His name was Patton, General Patton. Some of you have heard of him before, I think. So General Patton, he fought in World War I and he fought in World War II. He's a very famous general. Anyway, you can read about him. There's a movie about him if you want to see the movie. You can ask Gopal for a copy. So the point is that General Patton remembered, somehow or other, he was able to remember, maybe you've heard about this before, he was able to remember his many, many past lives as a soldier. So when he would go to the different battlegrounds during World War I and World War II, he would take the American generals with him, and he would point out and said, you know, this is where I fought this time. And he was able to identify, very interestingly enough, things in the battlefield. He'd never been to France before his whole life, but he was able to identify different places, items, villages. You know, one time he was driving, he had a driver, and he said to the driver, turn right here. And the driver said, no, that's not where you want to go. That's not where the battlefield is. And he said, no, I know. I'm the general. Turn right. So he turned right, and that's exactly where that battlefield was. So anyway, so he was able to write. And practically no one believed him, but he wrote many poems. He actually wrote a poem about how he was fighting for Hannibal. And, you know, anyway, I'm not going to go over the history of all these. You know, he was fighting different countries and different locations, life after life after life. And he was even talking about how one life he was disemboweled means that there was like a spear stuck in him and went all the way through him, and anyway, through the intestines and everything. That's called disemboweling someone, in case you want to do it. But I found it quite interesting that that's called jata smarana. That means one can remember his past life. But not only that point, but the point that his desire to be a fighter and, you know, just be heroic or whatever was fulfilled from lifetime to lifetime. How that desire was carried forth. Because the subtle body, according to the Gita, the subtle body carries one's conceptions of life from one body, gross body, to another. What's that? So his, you know, it's a perfect example of how the subtle body, how the subtle body is like the air that carries aromas, and it carries one conceptions of one from one gross body to another. So he had this desire to, you know, imagine, of course, I don't have that desire to fight from lifetime to lifetime, you know, to win. And he even enjoyed, you know, the martial spirit of being injured and everything like that. I mean, reading the Ramayana, you see this whole, you know, that martial attitude, you know, the Kshatriya attitude. They actually, their wounds are like, you know, something they enjoy practically. Something they enjoy. It's interesting. I mean, the story from the Mahabharata illustrates that too. I mean, they tolerate, it's like a sign of their heroism. It's like one of these awards they win, you know, like the Iron Cross or something like that. So there's a story in the Mahabharata about when Karna, he was taking instruction from Parashuram. And Parashuram had this thing about Kshatriyas. He didn't like them. So, you know, he killed 21 times, 21 generations of Kshatriyas, created rivers of and lakes of blood. Because his father was killed by a Kshatriya, by the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna. And so anyway, so he took his parasha, the axe, and started killing all the Kshatriyas. So Parashuram, he really had issues with Kshatriyas. So Karna, when Karna wanted to take instruction from him, you know, Karna sort of didn't tell him he was a Kshatriya or had a Kshatriya mentality. Of course, Karna at that point didn't know he was born in a Kshatriya family. Karna was being taken care of by some charioteers. And the charioteer is considered to be Shudra family. Anyway, so he went to Parashuram, and he was with Parashuram, and one day, taking care of his guru Parashuram, Parashuram put his head on Karna's lap while he was taking a nap. And while that was happening, there was this sort of like bug, this ferocious bug, you know, with big teeth on it. And it was sort of entered into Karna's body. You know, it's like burrowing into the body. Can you imagine that? And Karna, in order not to disturb his guru, Parashuram, he just tolerated it. Now, that's a Kshatriya. You know, somehow or other, you know, they enjoy that, you know, I'm tolerating it like that. The wounds of war, you know, they show off their, you know, if you ever go to like a World War II, of course, not many World War II veterans anymore, but they used to just like show off the wounds they got in the war. It's just like, you know, anyway, sometimes actually the ladies show off their operations too. But the Kshatriyas are very proud of that. It's the martial spirit. So he just tolerated it. This horrendous bug or monster that was burrowing his way in until a few drops of his blood fell on Parashuram's head. And Parashuram woke up and said, "What's this? Yuck! You blood!" And he said, "How did that blood get there?" And then Karna explained what had happened. There was this bug. I didn't want to disturb your rest. And then Parashuram got angry. He said, "Now I understand you're a Kshatriya." So that's the Kshatriya spirit. You know, you can see. You can see, actually see what Varna you are according to what spirit you have. I mean, a Brahmin, he doesn't like pain. He likes. I mean, he's able to do austerities, but at the same time, he doesn't like pain. Anyway, so in the Ramayana, you find these Kshatriyas, like, practically with their heads. Not only Kshatriyas, Rakshasas, who have the Kshatriya mentality, with the fact that their head's filled with arrows, it says, you know, like a pincushion, basically. And they're still fighting. Or you have, in the Mahabharata, you have Grandfather Bhishma, who is filled with arrows by Arjuna, and he's still rushing at Arjuna. Can you imagine that? Still rushing at Arjuna. Finally, Arjuna had to fill him with so many that he knocked him over, and he couldn't move. But can you imagine being like a pincushion filled with arrows? I mean, just one little cut and we become like bewildered. Then, oh, I cut. Oh, it hurts so bad. Mommy, come and kiss it. But anyway, so that's a Kshatriya mentality. So getting back to the point about Patton, General Patton, he had that mentality, so he carried that through life after life. So that's, in my mind, that's a perfect example of, you know, the mentality being carried from one life, a modern example that you can use in preaching. The mentality being cut, and people can read about Patton if they want. It's not some story from the Shastras that they may or may not accept, but it's General Patton. So there's many stories about people remembering or carrying the same mentality as the previous life. And we can utilize this to sort of prove to people that there is transmigration and also that they should be careful about what they think at the time of death. Now, let's get to the devotee point. So, in the Bhagavad Gita, the question is raised in this whole particular context that by Arjuna. Basically, he says, what happens to the one who just doesn't make it, you know, in this lifetime? Is everything lost? Because we understand with material things that when you just don't make it in this lifetime, then even when you do make it, it's lost. You know, even if it, like, I mean, look at the example of Jobs, Steve Jobs, all right? You know, he was extremely successful. He made it. I mean, billionaire, everything like that. But he lost everything at the time of death. You know, all these big accomplishments. You know, he's like maybe the Time Man of the Year or the Man of the Century or whatever he was. You know, because his technological advances changed the way that we interact, changed the way that we think. I mean, really, he affected us in many ways. You know, just like here, you know, this is due to him, and my pocket that's due to him, and David Prabhu has his iPad, and I have my iPad, and you know, it's practically all pervading his influence. Even this Windows computer, this is a Windows computer, not a Mac, for those of you who don't know what the difference is. Even this Windows computer, the interface is actually a copy. Slightly different, so they wouldn't get sued for violating the copyright law. But it's a copy of the Mac interface. So he's really, you know, affected. You know, everyone uses a computer here, basically. Even if you use Linux, and actually Linux, the Mac is an adaptation of the Linux system. In case you didn't know that, like Jagadguru, he really likes Linux. He's a Linux addict, and so. And so it's an adaptation. So in other words, he changed so many things in our society. You know, this person, one person, and you know, he's also responsible for all this virtual reality in the different films, like Avatar and everything like that. It says the technology that his companies developed are responsible for that. So you got the films and not the internet per se. But the visual aspects of the internet. You know, the internet was just like a thing for hackers before, where you just had to command line stuff. I remember in the beginning, it was just all command line rather than, you know, an interface like this, you know, beautiful interface. So anyway, so but then he died recently of cancer. And when he died of cancer, he didn't take anything with him, not even a Mac or an iPad. He got an eye coffin, and that's, or maybe he was cremated, I'm not sure. But so you lose everything. So the question was, you know, even Arjuna asked Krishna that question, you know, what happens if one doesn't make it? Is he just lost like the cloud in the sky? You know, like a cloud in the sky, when the wind blows, it breaks it up and it's finished. Or when it rains, you know, lets out all the water in it, and then it's finished. You know, is that the destination of a transcendentalist who doesn't make it? And Krishna explained that, of course, in this endeavor, famous verse, Swapamabhyasya dharma chitayate mahatavi, there's no diminution, there's no fear. And he explained this, that basically was something that we preach often, is that you carry your spiritual advancement from one lifetime to another. So specifically that means one of two things according to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. One thing is, if one is a little advanced in devotional service, and the other thing is if one is very advanced in devotional service. So for one who is a little advanced in devotional service, that's the description given here. First you go to the heavenly kingdom, and you enjoy like anything. And then you come down and you're born in a nice Jewish family. Not rich family, sorry about that. But then you're born in a wealthy family. Do you understand? So that's one scenario If you're a little advanced, you know, you're just like chant Hare Krishna, you're going to come to the temple, but you haven't really quite surrendered, you know, it's just like, I'm just, you know, I got my life, Krishna has his life. Little advanced. And then if you're very advanced, then you take birth in a family of transcendentalists. Of course, on the other hand, it's not that everybody who takes birth in a family of transcendentalists is very advanced. See, that was a mistake we made in ISKCON. That you thought that everybody or all children that were children of devotees were necessarily very advanced. And you imposed the expectations on them that were unrealistic. You understand what I'm talking about? Unrealistic expectations. You thought that they'd be like Prahlad Maharaj, who was completely disinterested in sporting activities or anything when he was young, right? The parents generally thought, you know, all I have to do is just throw the kid in the temple room and he'll come out all right. At the end, you know, doesn't need any material education, just needs to know how to play the mridanga, that's about it. And, you know, if he's not chanting 16 rounds, we'll beat him or, you know, chastise him or something like that. And then sometimes you see some of the kids are extremely depressed. And I was speaking to someone the other day, told me that the child of one of the devotees was just so upset with the pressure that they were being put under to be Krishna conscious that they ate meat just to rebel. They didn't want to eat meat. They got sick when they ate meat. But they just did it because it was just too much. They were being put under pressure, so they ate meat. You know, sometimes a person convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. So if you force someone to do something, then you may have the opposite. In many cases, you will have the opposite effect, the opposite reaction. So there was this expectation that, you know, this whole thing was Vaikuntha children. And some of the children were Vaikuntha children, some were Kuntha children. But I'll give you a practical example. Advaitacharya. You know, you might think, oh, Maharaj, you know, you're just being a sannyasi. But Advaitacharya had six children. Three were Vaikuntha children, and three were useless. And that's Advaitacharya. Advaitacharya is G-O-D. He is God. Right? Yet three of his children became like abject mayavadis, useless, didn't understand the philosophy. He rejected them. It's interesting. I'm not saying he rejected children, it's not the point, but he took care of them, but he didn't want anything. And three were really fantastic, like Achyutananda and some of the others. So he really, you know, they were useful. And Prabhupada also commented in that regard about disciples of the spiritual master. And some of his own godbrothers, Prabhupada said they became useless by disobeying the order of the spiritual master, which was to cooperate amongst each other. And some of them were quite envious of Prabhupada. I mean, one time, there was one get-together of the godbrothers, and they were listing all the achievements of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's disciples. And they didn't list any of Prabhupada's achievements. You know, it's just like, huh? You know, they were just getting together and so envious. They didn't list anything Prabhupada did, which was far surpassed anything any of the other ones did. And Prabhupada wrote them a letter and he said, you know, I've done much more than any of you. Not that Prabhupada was proud. He was just like saying, you know, come off of it already, you know. There's actually a letter in the letter book like that from Prabhupada. Someone sent it to me yesterday. It was quite interesting that, you know, I've done, look what I've done, you know. And not that Prabhupada wanted recognition or anything like that, but, you know, he just wanted honesty in people's statements like that. So, anyway, so getting back to the point. So you have a Advaitacharya who had three good and three bad. And so the point I'm making is not that every child born in a devotee home is an absolutely pure Vaikuntha child. You know, I know I'm going to get killed for this one. But if anyone happens to be listening, many of them are, and some of them are not. But in case, whatever they are, it's a fortunate birth. And so we have to be very empathic with them to understand what is their level of spiritual advancement. Encourage them in a very positive way. Sometimes in certain cultures, people are encouraged in a negative way. I'm not talking about ISKCON right now, but I was just talking yesterday to some people from a different country, and they were telling me how they were, when they were young, they were just like beaten all the time, you know, and into submission or into following. I mean, just like, I was thinking, it's the most horrible thing. Most horrible thing. And now they don't want anything to do with their father. Or mother. And their mother is pulling, like, guilt trips. It's actually quite funny because I remember my own past. The mother is telling them, you know, I'm dying. You know, they're getting calls from the mother, I'm dying, and you won't even come to my funeral. You know, it's from India or something. I'm just thinking, you know, sounds familiar. Deja vu, you know, I've been there. You know, I joined the movement, it was like that. My mother relayed the information to her husband that she was dying, and I wouldn't even care enough to come to her funeral. So it says, you see, there's like common denominators between different domination or abusive cultures, isn't it? It's really interesting, the manipulation. So the point is, whatever the child is, or whatever he's a Kunta or Vaikuntha, or wherever they came from, they can become Krishna conscious by the proper association. I mean, that's the idea, the touchstone aspect of Krishna consciousness. I mean, even in South America, there are some examples of people who joined the movement. They were actually the secret police coming to investigate the movement. And because they associated with the devotees, they later admitted, they said, you know, we came to investigate you, but now we want to become one of you. It was after they took initiation, but... You know, because in order to investigate, they had to fit in. And they had to attend the morning programs and show themselves to be a good devotee. So they're going to the morning program, learning to chant all the prayers, chanting their rounds every day for the devotees. They're probably the best devotees because they're from the military. So they're more disciplined, isn't it? So they're much more regulated than the other devotees. And everyone's thinking, this is a great devotee. Would you like to go on the altar and worship Radha and Krishna today? So you had people from the... from the different secret services in the different countries. It happened in Brazil and also some other countries, other Latin countries. And they joined the movement. They became devoted. In Chile it also happened. And it's interesting because by the association, the proper mood, then anyone can become a devotee, whether they're, whatever background they're from, as long as there's no offenses committed, number one, and as long as we deal with people kindly. Yeah, the movement deals with people kindly. Because when you force people to be devotees, it doesn't work. You know, devotional service from the heart, it's not from the body. So anyway, so those are the two different things that happen in the next life for a devotee. You know, either a rich family, I mean, either demigods, then rich family, or a family of transcendentalists. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, birth in a family of transcendentalists is very rare. Now, Prabhupada, one time there was a devotee who died, I mean, not just one time, but there's one instance of a devotee who died because he had done something horrible. And Prabhupada said that he will take birth, if the demigod planet has come down to the earth planet afterwards, and take birth in a rich family, and then he may take up Krishna consciousness. But he'll get the opportunity. Prabhupada said the opportunity. But then Prabhupada said he didn't take the opportunity in this life, so who's to say that he will take the opportunity in the next life? So there's another point, too. So it's not that one should just sit down on their laurels, you know, rest on their laurels, and say, you know, this next life I'll get an opportunity. You know, this life, you know, let it all hang out, go to the Bollywood movies, or whatever. Someone was telling me about the Bollywood movies, how horrible they are yesterday. They said that they can't watch them because they actually show, a lot of them show like rape scenes and everything like that, and they were almost glorified, you know, like that. How horrible. So anyway, so you may think, you know, all right, let's take it easy. Or as they say, tomar la suave. So we'll just take it easy and everything will be all right. You know, Krishna says, no loss of diminution. But the point is, if you don't have the desire to take up or become Krishna conscious now, you're not going to have it in the next life because you carry the same conceptions. You get the opportunity. You're getting the opportunity now, you're not taking it. So if it's the next life, you get the opportunity. Very lucky you're not going to take it in the next life either. So it's all desire. It's not the next life things are going to be easier for you. Yeah, next life. You know, next life I'll be born as a pure devotee. Huh? You know, this doesn't happen like that. Next life you'll be born with the same nonsense mind that you have now. You know, I hate to tell you that. You got a different body, yeah. You get a nice lady's body, whatever. Or nice man's body, or, you know, whatever type of, or nice dog's body. At least you'll be pedigreed. For a devotee who takes birth in a dog family, he takes birth in a high-class dog family, right? Chihuahua. A pedigreed chihuahua. And he gets to bark at everybody. So the point I'm making is that, which is an important point, that, you know, whatever type of body you get, gross body, let's forget about that for a second. But whatever your desire is to be Krishna conscious or to not to be Krishna conscious, that'll be the same when you're born. That doesn't change by changing bodies. Because the conception of life is carried. So that means desires, the subtle body, linga sharira, is carried to another body. So it's the same you. Just like General Patton, he simply wanted to fight, engage in chivalrous, you know, so-called chivalrous activities, and enjoy, you know, piercing others, being pierced, and riding on a tank. You know, I'm sure you've seen General Patton before. There's so many pictures of him with a hard shell helmet like that. And so one devotee was even recommended we should get the movie to preach, but I'm not sure about that. So wherever he was, like desire-wise, that's it. Not just the gross body, but the subtle body is exactly the same. So now is the time to make that adjustment in your subtle body. There's not going to be a better time. You think there's going to be a better time, better situation? Ain't like that. Okay, on that happy note, any questions or comments? Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe the situation that Krishna has set, I mean, even in certain cases, Krishna may be sending someone to a particular family to help the parents become more renounced. I mean, like the case of Maharaj Anga, he had Mena as his son. I mean, he was obviously a very advanced devotee. And I don't know about his wife, can't comment on her. But she was the daughter of fear or death personified. And he was sent to help his father just like give everything up. You know, so there's different reasons why things happen. You know, I'm not going to get into all the different reasons. I mean, you can imagine different reasons why people would take birth in a different family. But it's not always because they want to perform devotional service. All right. Okay.